Dear listeners, Sairam from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet. And I say this because I experience this every single day in Prashantinilam. And this new year, 2013, has been so exciting. It has been one of energy and color, dynamism and dedication, vibrancy and variety, excellence, and I should say divine ecstasy. Because January 1st began with the alumni of Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning gathering in Prashantinilam in hundreds and making their offering of love and gratitude in the form of heartfelt reminiscences and soulful talks. And Prashanti on the New Year Day was overflowing. It almost seemed like everyone who could make it was here on this day because they wanted to start 2013 on a divine and peaceful note. And then, 10 days after this, on January 11th, was the scintillating inaugural session of annual sports and cultural meet of Sri Satya Sai Educational Institutions, which continued for 4 days. If you have been following this on our website, you would have watched even the cultural programs every evening in Sai Kulwant Hall from January 11th till January 14th, from the drama on St. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by the Vrindavan campus, to the insightful compositions and renderings by the Anandpur campus, to the elevating drama on Adi Shankara by the students of the Prashantinilam campus. And the other highlight was the reinvigorating Sri Satya Sai Balvikas alumni meet, which was also held during this time on January 12th and January 13th. More than 2,000 alumni of Sri Satya Sai Balvikas were here to participate in this function. And those of you who heard or watched these sessions, I am sure must have felt that deep sense of jubilation within to see how so many youngsters from all over India are so inspired to lead a life of values, a life of dedication to a higher cause. The talks on these sessions were really music to the ears of anyone of this land who wishes and prays for a better, safer, saner and responsible society in the days to come. There are approximately 10,000 alumni of Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning in the world today, but the Sri Satya Sai Balvikas alumni are in lakhs. And interestingly, this two-day celebration, Sri Satya Sai Balvikas alumni meet, started on January 12th, coinciding with the 150th birth anniversary of Swami Vivekananda, a personality who even now energizes young minds by the mere mention of his name. In fact, last Thursday on this hour, we did have a special episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. And in this episode, we talked about the powerhouse of purity and positive energy, Swami Vivekananda. This was based on this venerable Swamiji and his teachings in the light of Bhagwan Baba's message. If you have missed this, you can even now download this from our website, from the Thursday Live Archives of RadioSai.org. Do listen to this and your listeners tell us what you felt about this program and if you would like more such episodes on this series. And if yes, how would you like it to be structured and what aspects you would like us to deal with? Please do write to us, listener@radiosai.org. That's our email ID. So coming back to this January, the celebrations in this month are not done yet. On January 19th is coming up the 12th anniversary of Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, Whitefield, Baba Super Speciality Hospital in Bangalore. And this hospital came up 10 years after Baba established the first such hospital in Puttaparthi. Recently, on November 17th, 2012, this hospital organized the first International Healthcare Information Technology End Users Conference focusing on how to utilize information technology for improving quality of patient care. And this was attended by many distinguished healthcare IT professionals from India and abroad. In fact, the chief guest for this occasion was the Principal Secretary to the Government of Karnataka in charge of IT and BT, Information Technology and Biotechnology, Mr. I.S.N. Prasad. And one statement he made during his address rings in my mind. He said, "I have never come across an institute like this, which has a spiritual background but is not shy of technology and modern medicine. And then does not build on top of it. It has a very unique combination which I am yet to come across to this degree anywhere else. I would be happy if hospitals elsewhere provide this standard and quality of care. Does not matter even if they charge. In fact, there is a comprehensive article on this conference with pictures, audio and video clips on our website radiosai.org. You may want to see this, dear listeners. So this hospital in Bangalore has made great strides in this last one decade. What are the things that make this hospital truly unique? How challenging it was in the initial days of this hospital? What really kept them going then, and what motivates them now when so much has changed in the last 2-3 years? And what is the future like for this medical institution, surrounded on all sides by information technology parks and premium malls? And how do the employees and the volunteers working in this hospital feel? Well, that is what we will be discussing today, and you will hear this from the voices again of youth. Yes, the alumni of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, who have been working in this institution right from the time of its inception. But before we get on to that, first things first, let us offer our loving and most reverential salutations at the lotus feet of that colossus of inspiration, that source of all nobility and compassion, our beloved Bhagwan Baba. Dear Lord, please bless us so that we too strive to be a small lamp to light the light of love in the hearts of as many as we can, so that we too learn the art of pure, selfless and unconditional love. With this prayer, let's move on. I am Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and let me now play for you a panel discussion that I recorded on this hospital not many weeks ago. Here it is. Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to this special episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. On January 19, 2013, the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, Whitefield, celebrates its 12th anniversary. On the day of the inauguration of this super speciality hospital in 2001, the chief guest of the day, the then Prime Minister of India, Mr. Atal Bihari Vajpayee, said, "It is no hospital or high-tech healthcare center. This is a palace come temple." And Baba, who spoke after the Prime Minister, said, "While this building is imposing from outside, it will also confer inner bliss. This hospital has a divine quality that will draw the whole world to it. You can do wonders with purity of heart." So this institution started with that single pure intention of Baba to bridge the gap between those who need healthcare the most and those who can deliver it the best. And it has indeed come a long way. And one group of employees in this hospital who have played a pivotal role in the furtherance of this mission of the hospital is the former students from Baba's university who have joined this institution after their academic education, and they continue to serve many a times behind the scenes to ensure that this lofty cause carries on with the fragrance of compassion and selfless service as envisioned and lived by Baba. So how has it been for these alumni to work in Baba's hospital in Bangalore? How do they see the journey that the hospital has traversed in all these 12 years? Has anything new happened in this last 1 or 2 years? And what is their source of strength and inspiration? Well, that is what we will be discussing today, and joining us in this program are three senior managers from the hospital: Ashwin, Senior Manager Cardiology; Karthik, Senior Manager Accounts; Satish Chandra, Senior Manager Central Stores; and the fourth participant is Neeraj, who is Senior Manager Human Resources from the Medical Care Division of Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, the governing legal and financial body of the hospital. Welcome all of you to this program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So now all of you have done your post-graduation in Babas University, and some of you probably did your Masters in Business Administration, Masters in Financial Management, or probably Masters in Physics or Biosciences or Chemistry, which are pure sciences. But none of you really got trained in hospital administration per se, or, you know, going to a course which will teach you about the job of that the paramedical officers do in a hospital. So was it kind of strange when you joined the hospital, you found yourself in the hospital with the degrees that you did in Babas University? How was it for you, Ashwin?
Thank you, Prashni, for having us. To me personally, I've always felt it's true, we all come with different qualifications. Some of us are into science, some of us are into business management. But to serve Swami, you just need one qualification. And I'm sure that's something that all of us have felt, and that is to want to be part of His mission. I remember as a child and as a student, for years and years, I would look at Him and admire the way He'd be able to give Himself away to everyone. And I think there's a little streak of a rebel in every one of us that aspired to try and be like Him. Could we be a drop of this majestic ocean that gives itself away in love and in compassion to everyone? So I think the truth really is, when Swami picks you up and gives you an opportunity to be part of a mission as glorious as this, He is really the inspiration behind our willingness to be able to participate. And as long as there is willingness, skill will come.
So it didn't really matter what you studied here. You just had the willingness, that zeal to be part of this mission, and everything else just fell in place.
And I'm reminded of when Swami kind of asked me, he picked up three of us, and then he specifically asked me, he just kind of gave a background and said, there's some work in the Bangalore hospital. He didn't specify what and all that, but he said, there's some work to be done, will you do it? And I said, yes, Swami. And he asked me, are you ready? And I said, I thought, I should be the epitome of surrender and say, Swami, if you say so. And he didn't, let it go that way. So he asked me, are you ready? So it kind of links up to what he was saying, So until I said, yes, Swami, I am ready, then he lovingly just, slapped on my cheek and then said, okay, go and work. So I think that's the thing, right? Unless that willingness is there, and then everything gets added on to you. Like, when we joined, we joined as technical officers. But then as we were working with the equipment and things, but now over the last, one decade or so, we have kind of slowly grown into a managerial cadre. So I think, that's what it was. I mean, it was the willingness, and then, Swami kind of blessed us with a lot of opportunities to grow and learn in the process.
Your views, Karthik?
Actually, it really brings back a lot of memories. When Satish said, Swami asked the question, are you ready? When we were waiting for Swami to give us a chance to work in His institutions, Swami had called us for an interview, the waiting boys, as we were called then. And He was trying to coax us to go home. This is a game we play. Swami, tells us, you go home, go home. And, we will say, no, Swami, we want to be with you, we want to be with you. This was going on. Swami said, I can get you a job in so many banks are there. I will get you employed in one of those. And then, we said, no, Swami, we want to be, our parents have given us permission to be with you. Who's asking about your parents? Do you want to be here? Is what, that has always been, Swami's major. And about these qualifications you were mentioning, once more, the hospital was being set up, and even before the hospital was being set up, Swami was identifying people for the hospital from among the waiting boys. And in one such interview, he first graphically described what goes on inside the operation theater. He said their patient bodies are treated like vegetables. That's how he began. And at the end of it, he asked a question: so how many of you want to work in the OT? Well, I mean, after such a description, it was a bit difficult, to say yes or no. But there were some hands that promptly went up, and the milder of those, I mean, one of those was me, just half raised our hands, and then Swami quickly picked that up and then said, I wanted to say yes if Swami wanted it that way, but at the same time, said, you won't be comfortable working with blood. So you look after inventory management, is what he said. So you might have done anything, but what can qualify you to, be ready to face blood? And so he knew best what was right for each one. And for some he would get them trained for what he was putting them into. For some it was a totally different job. And for some, eventually, now I find that, I am in accounts and that's what I have done. So you finally get there.
But before that you did something else in the hospital.
Yes, Swami wanted me to do inventory management. So I first started in substores. That was in the cardiac OT. Mm-hmm. So it was, just like I had half raised, I was half in the area where there was blood all around, and yet I was not part of it because I was just in the stores. Yes. After that I worked in the, pharmacy. That's a little bit away from the blood. Now I am totally into accounts. So, it's been a wonderful journey all these years, 12 years.
And the point that Satish Chandra was mentioning, that you get a really experience at the ground level of the operation of different departments. I think that probably also you were benefited.
Yes, yes. When Karthik was mentioning about the operation theater and blood, I just recollected my school days. When I was in my 10th, one of the subjects which I really dreaded was biology. And in my 11th, I purposely sought admission in a technical school so that I can drop two of my biggest threats. One is one language, and the biggest, more than the language, was biology. I was so happy. Henceforth, I won't touch biology at all. So this was way back in 1987. And 14 years later, in 2001, when Swami graciously permitted me to come back and work for him after going out for some time, when he said that, I will put you to work in my hospital, I said, my God, here I am landing in the same place where biology is the basic fundamental thing which goes every day. And connecting from what Ashwin and Satish were saying, actually really what matters is this, our attitude. What Swami sees in each one of us is, do we have the attitude to serve Him? And that time it doesn't matter where He puts in. He gives us the power, He gives us strength to work there. And just to give another dimension of this, when I was doing my MBA, in my first year, for our batch, one subject which was dropped from our seniors was financial accounts. And we were given only the orientation of financial accounts. And when that 3-hour lecture went on, I'm telling you, from the bottom of my heart, I thanked Swami. Thanks for taking out financial accounts from the credit cards, otherwise I would have failed. It was so dreaded. And exactly 2 years after I finished my MBA, when Swami put me to work outside in a company, 1 year was a marketing job, and suddenly the events took such a turn that I was put into accounts, finance and accounts, and I was trained into that. And the moment I landed in 2001, and when Swami told me to work in hospital, it was a place where there is a beautiful fusion of biology with accounts, because I was doing internal audit. So that's how Swami works, what he sees is just the attitude, and he gives all the strength, all the power, whatever support that he has to give, and really that makes us realize that we are just the instruments, and he's the one who works through us. So
it's quite amazing, Neeraj mentioned. I think it's true for everyone. Swami, as a master, he pushes you to face your fears. And we find that happening very often, and we always come out stronger provided we can have faith that, you know, somebody else is on the driver's seat.
Exactly.
You know, if I could just add a small moment. I was among a few others who were trained in some equipment. And to me, being a technician was something that I would never imagine I would become. So as much as we had the attitude and love to serve Swami, the last thing that you would want yourself to be known as, you know, would be a technician, which would which is often it's not seen as a very pivotal person in this whole machinery of a hospital. And very often I would ask Swami, why would Swami put his students who are masters in science, who have had great track records in academics, who are talented, you know,
were a gold medalist.
I mean, that aside, hoping to get a gold medal from Swami someday, but the fact is that we had lots of students who were very, very, who were capable of, you know, of just setting out a fiery career outside. I think, you know, it comes to me very strongly because when I and many of my friends, who unfortunately are not in the studio, but you have a huge number in the hospital, when we were trained into handling equipment, when we actually came into the hospital, I expected all these equipment to be, you know, lying there, you set it up, you get into the challenging aspects of getting it all working, get the patients in, etc. And can you imagine, the first day I remember, we stepped into the hospital and there wasn't even furniture in each of the rooms. So the first job, which I proudly tell everybody that I did in the hospital, was I picked up a broom and swept. And I'm sure most of my friends who were working in various departments just did that. And it comes again and again to me that Swami never wanted us to be managers by way of authority. He wanted us to be able to understand what happens at the grassroots level. He wanted us to be able to be one with people whom we work with. He wanted us to show the true spirit of service in our work. And whether you are a manager, whether you're not a manager, that hardly matters. But can you be a silent force that keeps the hospital moving?
Yeah.
And such a humble beginning, often, you know, like Ashwin was saying, initially we are under the impression that, you know, these are the posts that are pivotal and, you know, these may not be. But, you know, he gets us started right at the very basics, then you understand that each cog in the wheel is so important. When we grow into, you know, managers, we realize that each one is so important because we have donned many of those roles personally. That seems to come out as a very powerful lesson, you know, from
when you look back now, 10 years later, all these reflections become so important.
Yeah,
you know, the master plan unfolding, you get that kind of a feeling. Okay, let me ask you this. I mean, the hospital has so many activities. I mean, it's a huge machinery, it's a huge ecosystem, and you would have looked at many times for guidance. You know, you would have wanted someone to hold your hands, because even though you have the attitude, you will want practical guidance at any stages of your work. So what did you really do in those periods of time? You know, whom did you look up to, Ashwin?
I think Swami was the real inspiration for all of us. I remember during the first year when we joined the hospital, each time we would visit Prashanthi Nilayam from Bangalore, Swami was very kind to call us all in and speak to us. And, you know, the number of things that Swami had said in those days keep coming back to us as sources of inspiration. To cite a few, one of the things which I remember Swami saying very often, I'm sure Swami would have called us in a number of times, but I've heard him say this at least a dozen times on different occasions. He would call us in, we would all huddle around his feet, and the first thing he would start off with is, where there is understanding, there is adjustment. Understanding unte, adjustment ostundi. And at that time, you know, it doesn't occur to you as to why Swami says such a thing. But when we look back, we realize that there are so many moments in the organization also where you have to be able to see the larger picture and adjust. be willing to take the good, to go that extra mile, to be able to make a little adjustment from your side so that you can make things better. Another thing which I hold very close to my heart is we all qualified, many of us with management degrees, etc. And managers are generally seen as people who are at a certain level of authority and they can have people under them do a lot of work. And I remember Swami bringing this up when he would talk to us. He would say, when you work in the hospital, always remember, you may never be a king, but you will always be a king maker. Mm-hmm. You can make many kings. And I think that's something which we all really try and hold. When people enter the hospital, it's rare that they notice the students at work. They would always talk about the equipment, they would talk about the fantastic work that's done, they would talk about the infrastructure that Swami has provided. But the truth is, I don't think Swami wanted any one of us to be in a position of where we were seen. But it's just that we should facilitate and be available and make people kings. We should make things happen in a very silent undercurrent kind of fashion. On a similar vein, I remember Swami mentioning once that when I introduce you into the organization, be like sugar and water. Swami has this habit of giving examples. Be like sugar and water. Don't be like oil and water. Yeah. Go in there, sweeten your environment. These are the few moments which I really think about.
When Ashwin, you're saying this is so important, that understanding unte adjustment vastundi. And I recollect in 96 and 97 that Swami gave the talks on management to the management students. His prime thrust was on man management, and that's why our book, the compilation of his discourses, which our batch took a lead in compiling, it was titled Man Management, because I personally believe, from my experience outside as well as now working for Swami, is the one thing which really matters is how do we really take care of people in the workplace. And in that perspective, one thing which occurs to me is that there is something which is unique in our institution. I see it everywhere, including hospitals, is that on one side we have, we can call them super seniors, these are people who have been in very high esteemed positions, either in government or in private sector. They have retired or they have taken early retirement and come here and occupying very senior prominent positions. So that is one. And at another side we have a group of people like us, many of us Swami students, younger lot who... We were fortunate to be, we have got a lot of guidance from Swami directly, and that youthful energy that we have. Now, if we look from the, what happens generally in a society is, we talk about generation gap. And these things, if we have super seniors and younger group together in one place, generally tends to create a lot of friction. But what I find is, one reason why Swami has put it, is made a beautiful confluence of experience with youthful energy. We have the seniors who have come with so much of experience outside, and they bring that valuable experience to us. Not only that, with their interaction with Swami, day-to-day interaction with Swami, they give that one insight we generally will tend to miss because of our euphoria or our highly energetic response. At the same time, for the work to go on, as you said, to be the king makers, the show should go on, the work should go on the same zeal. You need that youthful energy, which he has brought in terms of the students that he has infused in the hospital. And I would even go a little more to say, recently, now we have the nursing and the paramedical students who are being trained in our hospital. Swami is creating another generation who in future, after a few years, will be the pivotal force in the hospital when they become paramedical students or nurses, which would be about 40% of the whole strength of the hospital. And if they come from Swami's college, that Sai education background, I mean, I can wonder how beautiful design that Swami has created for his institution in the future.
The first batch has just passed.
Just passed and joined. So that mission is already in action. He has planned that, and that we can witness it so beautifully. So what is our role? I totally agree. To be like a sugar. We be there to add the sweetness. We may dissolve ourselves in that process, but we add the sweetness. That's what is critical.
Fantastic.
Swami as the divine human resource manager. And as you mentioned, for Swami, management always meant man management than anything else, because he always said men are more important than all the wealth of the world. That was the constant refrain of Swami in every management discourse. And here actually you see how the Lord is demonstrating to us how to manage human resources. Fantastic. What has been your experience, Satish?
Yeah, I mean, when you asked the question, where do you get your guidance? I was reminded, I mean, I was just counting the number of people, like when you were also mentioning, I was counting the number of people I had an opportunity to work with. Nothing less than 6 or 7 people, you know, over the last 10 years. And they have been like colonels from the army to air commodores in the air force to, you know, bankers to, you know, people who like held very senior positions in the Indian Railways and worked with the World Bank. You know, it's like so much of inputs have been, you know, given at various stages, and everything is hands-on. That's the other beautiful thing, you know. Every little thing, you know, there's, okay, we have done that theory, you know, during the college, but then when you are actually there, you know, on the court, you are learn things, you know, as they are going, and you know, the in the context, in the right thing, in the right context, it's brilliant, really. I mean, that's the kind of training I could never have imagined, you know, to have gotten anywhere else, and that's what I feel gives me the confidence to really go out and, you know, do my job and be able to also see, you know, what is required 10 steps ahead, you know. You develop a kind of foresight and intuition with, you know, with the background of, you know, all these experience which Swami has helped us gain.
As they say, you know, what they don't teach you in business school, you know, they, you know, famously,
yeah,
you learn all the theory, right,
yes,
in classroom, but Swami, you know, makes it so simple. His advice to one of the senior doctors was, "Mee illu laga chuskundi." You take care of this hospital as your home. So that covers everything that you need to say. There was no planning, organizing, directing, staffing, coordinating, controlling, reporting, budgeting, nothing of that sort. Just take care of this as your home. Everything else automatically falls in place.
Yeah.
And like Prashti said, he always treated, no, he has said, men are more valuable than all the resources in the world. That's, and so Swami has said, and he lived by it every moment of his life. Mm-hmm. In fact, see, you read in papers, whenever a company's expenditure goes up, and when a company is in the red, what is the first thing you hear? You say that, no, downsizing. But, you know, that has never even been thought about here. Swami used to ask, where will they go?
Where the people who, in general parlance, think dead wood or something like that.
They were not employees for him. They were much more than that. He used to think about, yes, you know, what would happen to them if they left this place. So that was never a consideration here at all. And, you know, I mean, I can't help recounting a very personal incident. This was about 2 years back, and my sister's wedding was finalized, and I was trying to get her wedding sari blessed by Swami, and I had tried over 2 or 3 times, and this was at a time when Swami was not, you know, you couldn't take him for granted. He would come for darshan today, he wouldn't come tomorrow. There was nothing you could predict. So this was an Akhand Vision day, imagine, and it was birthday time, the hall was packed, and I just brought whatever had to be blessed with me. And wonder of wonders, I mean, after the first session of Akhand Bhajan was over, I had a chance to, you know, get that blessed by Swami. And when it came out, there was not one sari, but along with the sari which I had sent for blessings, 3 more saris, you know, Swami had sent. And then he said, you select one from these.
Oh my God.
I didn't have any words. Can you beat this? Yeah. I mean, if this is not man management, yeah, what is?
Yeah, and really, I mean, that's the way Swami, I'm sure, not just four of us, but each one of us who has come in touch with Swami, you know, has such experience. For example, just to share, when Karthik was saying this, I just remembered, in 2001, I was saying, when Swami told me to join, he told me to join in on June 9th, and after that, he kept me sort of a waiting. I didn't have a waiting after my MBA, so maybe he wanted me to give that waiting experience before I joined medical division. So there was a small waiting period there, about 1 month, around Guru Purnima time. And in that period, he didn't say anything. After first thing he said that I will give you a work in hospital. For that 1 month, he almost forgot about it, seemed to have forgotten about it. And I started getting worried. What is happening? I'm stuck up in middle. That time, no, see, I mean, to see the concern of Swami, he would have maybe seen that sort of anxiety which is building up. He calls my brother and tells him, you tell your brother that he is getting worried that Swami is not giving him job. Tell him that I am waiting for a good time.
Oh.
And when I heard that, I'm telling you, I cried, because this is Swami. There are thousands of people waiting for him, for his darshan, and he just even looks into a small anxiety in mind of a small chap who's sitting there.
And that 1 month is not a big time.
Big, no, absolutely. But that's the concern and love that he has for
people.
Have
waited for years, but 9 years, 10 years.
Yeah. I think we all have experienced this, where Swami's investment as a divine administrator and manager was always on human resource. And I think that is a common experience of each one, not only the four of you, probably every person in the hospital can vouch for it. But let me now take you to a different gear. Now, if you look at the philosophy of the hospital, it's very grand. And more often than not, you will find the mission statements and vision statements of hospitals or any institution for that matter having this lofty objectives. And you will generally find very few institutions, you know, who live up to that great ideal. If you take up schools, you know, every school will have in its mission statement to produce character-rich children. But, you know, if you go to the brass tacks, we are able to live up to it only to certain percentage, all the schools, you know. So as you started working in the hospital and you had some idea about the philosophy of the hospital, but what you thought at the practical level, you were able to understand and implement the philosophy of the hospital. To what extent you thought you were able to see the application of the grand philosophy of the hospital in your day-to-day activities?
Yeah.
Neeraj, can you share your perspective?
Yeah. You know, two, three things which occurred to me when you said this. One thing, what these hospitals are meant, one portion of what Swami's medical care mission is for providing a quality health care free of cost. I would say that is only one part of it. There's one very, very, very important part, other part of this side is we provide that quality care free of cost, but with love and compassion. What makes this institution different is the way this care is imparted, and that's what we see the uniqueness of our hospital. For example, I recollect one of our very senior students who was in a very senior, when I joined he was about 8 years senior to me, working in Parthi. Super. He was telling me this. Once there was a patient who was in who underwent a cardiac bypass surgery, and post surgery he required certain course of treatment that required quite expensive medication. I remember this was in 94 or 95, and that time the medication cost was some 80,000, which was quite big amount that. And this was unusual expenditure, so called unusual expenditure compared to a normal what we spend on a patient. So this student of ours, brother of ours, he got a chance to take this matter to Swami, to take his guidance. So he mentioned to Swami, Swami, there is this patient who is in ICU and we have to procure some medicine which is not available in India. We have to import and that will cost about 80,000 rupees. Shall we go ahead?
Just for one patient?
One patient.
Do we do it?
Just one medication. You know what Swami's question was? Does the patient require that medication for his well-being? He said, medically that's what we have seen. He requires that particular medication to be given. Swami said, just go ahead. No questions asked. Because, you know, what he said was, the patient, what he has come to us, to our hospital, as our final hope that he will get cured. So when we have taken him, and he becomes a part of our family, we can do whatever required to ensure that he goes out hale and hearty. And that time, money doesn't become a consideration. So safeguarding the life of patient becomes the topmost objective. At the same time, I also heard from people who are very, very close, Swami was very, very particular that we don't waste paisa, anyone one paisa. So that is the other side of it. See the beautiful, the way Swami will infuse this management concepts. When it's required for a patient, the money is never a constraint. But otherwise, always find out whatever you are spending, even a rupee, is it necessary for patient care? So he will be very careful on that. There he will be concerned. So ensure the judicious use of the money. That was critical. And the reason he used to say that, which a very senior person has told me, is all the people who have donated money to Swami's institution is just because of their faith in Swami. Just by that one word, Satya Sai, they donate. They don't ask any questions how the money is utilized, because they know it will be utilized in the best possible manner. So when they have given the money in such a good faith, it is our responsibility to use it in the best way possible. So that is one of the philosophies. You know, how do we provide a best quality healthcare with love and compassion, at the same time making the best utilization of resources? It was something which occurred to me.
Taking from what Neeraj had said, no, we always, I think it came as a slight surprise to us when we entered the hospital that we didn't really have a clear stated mission statement.
Mm.
But that was because the founder of the hospital kept infusing it in words, interactions, and
he was a living mission.
It's true. I mean, I remember many, many times he had actually come to the hospital, and this whole idea of patient first is something which we read about, but we used to see it so much in the way Swami would interact. So if anyone has seen Bangalore Hospital, they would know what I'm talking about. It's a huge, huge, huge structure.
Hmm.
Massive structure. And I remember one morning when Swami was in Vrindavan, he was passing by, he noticed that there were a few patients who were waiting outside the hospital to be able to get access into the hospital. And that evening when there was an interaction, the only thing that was on Swami's mind is, how can these patients be waiting? Suppose it rains, or if it's going to be cold in Bangalore, the poor patients are going to be cold and it's going to rain. So let's build another small structure beside the entrance, a place where the patients can wait, a place where they will have a shelter over their heads. And it struck me as immensely, I mean, on one side you've got this massive structure in this complex, but you know, to Swami, it's not about what is already existent. It is about what can be created to make it easier and better on the patients. The hospital is connected floor to floor through ramps, and very often Swami would take a little buggy ride up these ramps. And I remember one day when he was actually coming down one of these ramps, he made the person driving the buggy stop, and he pointed at the ramp. And this is such a small thing. It's something that nobody would have noticed. And he looked at that and said, suppose a patient is in a hurry to go from point A to point B. Look at how rough the edge of that ramp is. What will happen if he hits the ramp and gets hurt? So make sure the ramp falls, the end of the ramp is smoothened out and it's driven to the floor. I mean, these are small things. You know, this eye for detail which you keep seeing in Swami. At one level, he is supposed to be the person who is the inspiration behind this hospital. We have his pictures up on the walls. He's the person who made this hospital possible. And on the other side, he had this eye for detail to go into the smallest of matters. The smallest of matters. With only one concern. The poorest of the poor who come to our hospital should have the best possible treatment. Let us look at the hospital through their eyes, not our eyes. Patient first was something that comes across very strongly. But Swami is coming to the hospital often.
Even I am reminded actually of the architecture itself of the hospital. I mean, the amount of input Swami had given the architects, and especially about the, I mean, you mentioned about the majesty and the grandeur of the place. You know, like the moment the patient enters, you know, that itself is, you know, firstly there is no billing counter in any of Swami's hospitals, so that's half the load taken up. And then the awe, you know, which a person feels when he enters that the place, you know, the atrium of the hospital. It's so grand and with the chandelier. And you know, every little thing has been really planned and thought of by Swami and, you know, executed so beautifully. And I remember, you know, having spoken to the project engineer of that time, and he said Swami actually wanted it to be modeled after the Buckingham Palace. You know, so it was like, you know, it was not a hospital, it was a palace where, you know, the patients are treated as kings, you know, like everywhere else, you know, customer is king, right? So this is the palace where the king resides. And, you know, the amount of planning that also went in, I remember also people asking, you know, the people telling Swami, since at that time, Swami says, you left so much of space in the front, you know, why do you need so much space, you know, like, because from a corporate standpoint, you know, this is all wasted space. But then, you know, now we realize after 10, 12 years, if you now come to the hospital, you see the whole place is, you know, so cluttered with, you know, so many buildings around. Now we see actually the way the hospital is positioned within the 55 acres it occupies. And, you know, the Swami had specifically also mentioned, it seems, to the architects that, you know, the from any place in the hospital, you should have fresh, you know, air and sunlight, because that's what aids the healing process. So the design of the, you know, the wards and everything is such that happens. And you know, there are, like he mentioned, you know, Swami had gone to the level of, you know, selecting the color of the granite on the floors, and it's beautiful. I mean, it's the amount of detail he went into, and this is what I really cherish. And I'm also reminded here of the last visit, you know, Swami to the hospital. At that time I was kind of managing the engineering department, and he was sitting in the central dome, and he looked up at the chandelier and asked who takes care of that. And then, you know, I kind of went forward. He said, you know, ensure that all these things are taken care of well, you know. And I said, Swami, yes. So that was like the, you know, the responsibility which he's kind of given us. And till my dying days, I'm definitely going to, you know, be around to, you know, see how to kind of keep this alive. And you know, the way it was, the way he has, you know, handed it to us.
I would like to add something to what Satish has said. Generally, when you talk of, when you think about how a patient comes to the hospital first, he would have, most of the cases, they already know that they have a heart ailment, and they know how expensive it is, and somebody would have told them this is where you get free care. And in my mind, you know, I think that when the patient comes, okay, if care is going to be provided free of cost, what kind of facility would I expect to see? I mean, is it that small house over there in that corner? Is that the hospital that they are talking about? And then all of a sudden, you know, he comes and then sees this massive structure. My God, is this what I am going to get for free? So free care never has been compromised care. Yes. And of course, being in finance, I'm tempted to add to what Neeraj has said also, something related to expenditure. You know, one, our finance controller always used to say, Swami never cared about absolute figures. You can't say, Swami, you know, this costs about 1 lakh rupees. He said, avasaramunte chudu. Mm. He never said, you know, 1 lakh I cannot spend without going into, you know, what it is for. Always avasaramunte, we will spend. If it is not required, not 1 rupee. So that is, you know, that's been how careful he's been about the trust that the donors have placed. Is what I guess, you know, the utilization of money was always spot on. And of course, the undercurrent, of course, has always been love. Swami has never seen somebody who comes to the hospital as someone else. You know, we sing this song, Oh Ma, Main muskaya, tu muskai, main roya, tu roi. So it's like, you know, Swami feels the pain of the patient, and he, for him, it's not somebody else. It is his own. I mean, you know, and I remember in one of the interviews, Swami is asked us, have you spent anything for patients? If you get an opportunity, please spend for them. If anything is required for them, you spend for them, I will give you. I will give you, he said. So, you know, patient care has always been the undercurrent, and, you know, Swami's love has been... And he, personally, he is... Having been in the hospital for 12 years, now, you know how complicated it is to run such a huge institution. I mean, it's got some 450 employees, just our Whitefield Hospital alone. I'm talking only about the paid staff. You know, if you add the honorary staff also, it will come to over 500 employees. It's not a joke. And, you know, and the kind of infrastructure that needs to be maintained, the equipment, and then the medical consumables that you need to buy, and the maintenance contracts, and it all runs into so many crores of rupees. Yet, he made you feel, when you were studying, did you ever feel that, you know, Swami is managing all this? Did you ever imagine, you know, you always felt he, you know, he has time for you, and for you alone. He has made each one of us feel that way. If this is not time management, what is? And, you know, I was just relating this to one of my friends, you know, just about 2 days back, and he was saying, you know, these days, you know, people talk about work-life balance, and, you know, we are the family, you know, that for Swami's family, and he had time for us no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Just to add to what Karthik was saying, you know, it just occurred to me, you know, I had this question myself, you know, when I was reading through Swami's discourses and recollecting what Swami told all of us during various interactions. Why is this free care? Why is this Swami giving free health care? He told in, if I remember, it is in the last visit to Whitefield Hospital, 2008, or one of the interactions in the hospital, I'm not very sure, but he said this very clearly, and that really conveys the point. He says that, these patients who come to our hospital, we provide them free health care, good quality health care. Why? Because for us, for me, they are like our family members, our kith and kin. Can we charge something for doing a service to our own family members? Now, I remember one of our very senior persons here had said that, no, looking at Swami as the creator who has given us life, will he... In his institution, will he charge for providing a healthcare? If he has provided us life, will he charge for providing a healthcare? It's not. I mean, that is a small token of love that he, you know, gives away.
Fantastic. I mean, there are so many beautiful perspectives emerging. And the most powerful thing that comes out from all the different things that all of you have said is for Swami, how it was always patient first. I mean, that is what he instilled in everyone. Every time he came to the hospital or he interacted with the functionaries of the hospital. And the other thing is, how do you do it? You treat the patient as your own. I think he has told it in different ways to different people, to doctors, to alumni. You always consider them as your own family member. But my question is, you know, considering them as your family member is a fantastic ideal. But from your experience of working in the hospital, you know, to what extent have you been able to put this into action? Because the amount of things that you go and do for your own, say, mother or father or your brother and sister is phenomenal. Okay, they are an intrinsic part of you. And Swami wanted, at least to some extent, you have that kind of an attitude and a relationship with everyone who steps into the hospital. So which means a lot of work that you'll have to do in the hospital processes and the way we function the hospital and the environment that we create in the hospital, so that the patient feels that kind of an environment there. So what do you think are the different things that we have done or in your own capacity you have seen happen in the hospital, which probably gave you a feel that, okay, to some extent at least, you know, we are trying to live up to that ideal that Swami has set for us. Your thoughts, Satish?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at patients at our hospital, you know, it's not a business transaction that, you know, once the patient gets treated and then he goes home and, you know, we don't hear about him after that. It doesn't end there. You know, actually, with our patients, we kind of insist, you know, that they, you know, come back to the hospital every 6 months to, you know, get a review checkup done, you know, and we have come up with some amazing, you know, programs. Like one of them I'm, you know, reminded of is the Sai Rehabilitation Program, wherein each patient is actually linked up with a doctor in his own, you know, wherever he is from. And, you know, that's, so when he has a, you know, health issue, he is immediately has a, like a local guardian doctor. And they're all the doctors who have kind of, they are part of the Satya Sai Seva organization, part of the Samiti. And, you know, they look upon that as their service to Swami. So it's a, you know, beautiful structure which Swami has kind of created. And so this is, you know, one thing. And then, you know, you can talk about the telemedicine. And
yes.
The thing.
See, one thing is to save the patient the expenditure on the medical care itself. But Swami went one step further. Now we have a telemedicine program. We first started considering that many of our patients are from West Bengal, and the distance between West Bengal and Bangalore is considerable. So the first telemedicine program was with West Bengal. So, you know, we have a nodal center there where there is a doctor at the other end also at West Bengal, and here, there is a doctor here. And we have a telemedicine session every once in a week where, you know, it may so happen that the patient may not have a cardiac ailment at all. Why should he spend 3,000 or 4,000 rupees, you know, commuting all the way from such long distances? So that is one of the things. And not just the patients. See, one aspect we might tend to forget is those who are with the patients.
Mm-hmm.
If my father or mother was in the hospital, what will be my mental state? You know, everything should be provided to me so that I can focus all my energies on, you know, praying for the well-being of... if I have to look out for myself, you know, where do I go for food? Where do I go for accommodation? Already I am in, you know, no position to,
yes,
yeah, take what's happening to me. So there's a canteen which provides food to the attenders at subsidized rates. There is an accommodation block which has been constructed exclusively for the patient attendants, not just for the patients. So, you know, this is taking care further and further, no? And the ambit of service is extended.
Right. Now, what I see it as the medical mission of Bhagwan, it is a comprehensive mission. It takes care of the physical needs, the mental needs, the emotional needs, and the spiritual needs of a patient. It's not unlike many of the other hospitals which focus purely on physical part, and maybe to some extent on the mental or the psychological part. But here the emotional and the spiritual component is very, very prominent. And I would like to add something, a particular facility which we have in our hospital, which is, at least to my knowledge, is something very unique. It's called a counseling department, which is working in really great proportions, and the amount of contribution it makes. I'll just share one incident which when I heard, I was really overwhelmed when I heard that. You know, how when a patient walks in, as you know, earlier Ashwin was mentioning and Satish was mentioning, when he walks into the hospital, he sees the majesty. He feels he has come at home. So it makes him calm and cool. So when he's mentally ready for receiving the treatment. So when the patient is under distress or requires that emotional support for his becoming well, how can we provide that in the hospital setup, along with the paramedical and the doctors who are there? Can we provide them some support which will take care of their emotional needs? Was what the intention, and that's how this counseling department came up. And how beautiful it works, I'll share that incident with you. There was one patient who underwent bypass CABG, coronary artery bypass. And post-operation, he was in the ICU. And somehow, he was not able to come out of ICU. He was leading from one complication to another. He was not cooperating with the doctors or nurses. And the doctors tried all the medical side, whatever was required, was given. But somehow he was not coming out. And it was getting elongated. That's not good, because that will have adverse effect on his well-being. So that's the point when the counselor stepped in. They anticipated there's something which is running behind, you know, inside him. And this counselor went to him, and she spent 4 sessions, about 1.5 hours, 2 hour sessions with him. And what I spoke to her, and she shared this experience. She said that the first thing which really struck the chord was, I could speak to him in the patient's own language, Marathi. He was a Maharashtrian patient. So that sort of built up a bond first. Then as she went deeper into his the particular story, she found that there was something which was running inside him, which was sort of eating him from inside. Now this man has a very interesting story. He's from a family where his father passed away at very young age, so he was very attached to his mother. And when he came for surgery, his mother had passed away a few years before that, about 4 to 5 years. Now every year he would do there is some particular period as per that tradition in which they have to do a worship, some ceremony for the mother. So when the call letter came from hospital, he found that it is coming in the same month in which he has to do the ceremony. So he knew that there is a clash, you know, typical ethical dilemma, whether he should do his whatever was ceremonially required in his tradition, but if he does that, he will lose the chance of a free surgery. So somehow he made up his mind and came to our hospital. Now as the surgery went on, he missed that particular event in which he was supposed to do the ceremony. So what was working on his mind was, oh, I couldn't do something which I had to do for my mother, who loved me so much. So that was working on him. And that was sort of, you know, having this effect which was causing him not to recover well. So that this counselor could associate and could bring it out. And she asked him a very beautiful question. She said, just suppose your mother was alive, okay, and suppose you had to do some particular ceremony for her to, you know, sort of worship her, you know, do some prayers. And I suppose at that point of time you had got a call card from the hospital for surgery. Will your mother say that you stay back and do the ceremony and miss your surgery? No, she will want you to first go to the operation, for the operation, get well and then come back. So keeping that in mind, can you consider that you first take care of your health, and when you go back, can you do the ceremony after you go back? You are back home well. And that will make your mother happy. In fact, she said that the amount of love and concern that you have for a mother, which shows up from the, you know, what is there in your heart, that by itself will make her soul happy. So you have made her happy already. Now it is in your hand to make yourself healthy. So this is the second session, and immediately after that, the patient started becoming better. So on the third day after the counseling, he moves to the ward. He was stuck up in ICU for some 10 days. He came to the ward. And there's a beautiful the center, no, the healing center which is created in the counseling area. He was wheeled in there. He couldn't walk because he was not that well. He wheeled in there and he came and prayed there. And of course, we don't know what exactly he prayed. The patients are supposed to pray to their own God or own power or whatever, whomever they want to pray to. So this person was wheeled in, and you know the best part? After the prayer, he walked out of the room. Wow. That is the difference that made of just being in that place and, you know, getting connected, maybe to his divine mother, maybe to his soul of his physical mother, whatever it is. And when he goes back to ward, all the doctors and the nurses call up the counselor and say that, I don't know what miracle has happened. This patient is cooperating in all ways possible. Everything. Whatever we tell, he's doing it. Within few days, he becomes alright and goes home. Now this is one thing, if we had looked only from the medical side, he would have done a lot of things, of course, and he would have become well, I'm sure. But it would have taken a long time, maybe a lot of physical distress. But that one small, that emotional component which was there in his life, when that was touched upon, when that wound was healed, now how the recovery became so fast. When I heard that, I'm telling you, I went to the center myself after that, and I sat there. And it was a beautiful experience. So that's the one thing. That's how our the way Swami has envisioned his medical care in terms of, you know, the completeness, the holistic thing, the physical, emotional, mental and spiritual well-being of a patient. So I thought I would share on that.
So if we look at the way the hospital works, it's interesting to see that we are working in two totally contrasting ways to the same end. At one end, we try and customize our care for the benefit of the poor that come. And as Neeraj mentioned, that can be the small initiatives such as making sure we have people who can speak multiple languages. So a patient is spoken to in the same language that he knows. And you have people coming with speaking a number of languages on a daily...
16...
is the last time. Can you imagine?
We have a pool of counselors which can speak 16 languages.
In Swami's hospital in Karnataka, you would expect people to speak in Kannada. But it never happens. It never happens. I know there have been days when I've stepped into the department and never spoken a word of the language that I know best. You always try speaking to patients in the language that they can. And so there are as I was mentioning, there are, at one level, we try and customize our care, keeping in mind what the patient needs. A simple example. To make the hospital a little more child-friendly, there was a time when we tried to introduce a large number of stuffed toys for the benefit of the little children. And I was a bit surprised one day when there was a mother, a young mother, who came to me with her crying child saying, "The child is too scared about these stuffed toys." Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? Because the child has not seen such a big teddy bear in its life. You're talking about a child coming from a village, you know, who's possibly not seen such thing. It's a very alien concept to it. So what do? We go back to the drawing board, we try and pull out some wooden toys. Little geometric shapes and wooden things that will have the child feel more comfortable. Languages. We've done what we can to introduce people who can speak a large number of languages. And we're always open to people who can speak as many languages as they can. So that when the doctor speaks to the patient, that person comes in to ensure that the patient understands exactly what the doctor has said.
And this is so important in India, in a country like India, where you have so much of diversity. And this might seem a very simple thing, but I think when you think deep, it makes so much, the level of comfort zone of the patient increases so much, right? Especially when they're from rural areas, and as it is, they're coming to a big city, and they're already scared about all these high-rise buildings and all that. And they feel they are in an alien land. I think 90% of our patients are of that nature. And when they find someone, oh, someone is speaking in Konkani, someone is speaking in Sindhi, then probably there is a great sense of comfort.
So that's one side, Rushdie. You know, we're trying to customize, ensure the patient is coming home. It's about the patient walking in feeling that he's at home, in a totally new place, in a totally new environment. Mm-hmm. But at the other end, this is world-class healthcare that we are trying to provide to people. So as I mentioned at the beginning, there are two contrasting efforts. On one side, we customize to go right down to the patient's level. What kind of food does he eat? What kind of language does he speak? How do we make the child more comfortable? And on the other side, if you look at the equipment and the IT infrastructure in the hospital, it's comparable to the best in the world. A consultant who just returned from the Cleveland Clinic a month ago, we were surprised to know, he came in and said, "We have equipment that's comparable to Cleveland, which is the number one hospital in the United States." I know that we have invested a large amount of money into IT infrastructure. And even recently during the IT conference, we were acknowledged as being among the best IT infrastructures available in the country. And it comes back to me again and again, why do we do so much? Why do we invest so much in terms of the best of equipment, the best of IT infrastructure, the best of technology, be it voice recognition at one end, to telemedicine, to, you know, I mean, you name it. The technologies are all there, they're all being used. I see big billboards in Bangalore. When a hospital comes up with robotic surgery, it wants to tell the whole world that it is there. We have introduced robotic surgery. But in our hospital, what is the whole incentive of introducing the best of equipment and infrastructure? It comes to me again and again that this was one way by which we could, again going back to what Neeraj had said about devotees donating to the hospital in trust. And very often when we invest in IT infrastructure that is world class, there are many, many smaller administrative steps that are taken off. We tend to spend less in many other unnecessary areas which do not directly contribute to patient care. Let's say stationery or paper or processes. I mean, all this is deleted. By going paperless in the OPD, the actual drive is, if I receive a certain amount to spend for the patient, how much of this can actually go to the patient? As much as possible. So let's set up an infrastructure that would allow us in time to be able to give as much as what we receive to the patient directly. And that was,
digitization of X-rays.
Yeah. The amount of care, the quality of care, that also gets enhanced in the process. For example, we have gone in last 2 years in both the supers. We have gone from the film X-rays to digitized X-rays. In fact, all the radiology, all the diagnostic reports are now available in digitized form. One way of looking at it is how it saves in terms of stationery or the physical space. Second thing is, in the digitized form, it's very easy to share that information and get some expert opinion, even from remote. Even a consultant or a very specialized person sitting somewhere else can have a look at the scan and give the best, whatever his reading and the best method to tackle with that issue. And I remember one more thing which when you're saying about we have introduced another thing is that depending on the patient parameters which are captured in the HIS, the Hospital Information System module that we have, if a particular parameter goes beyond a critical level which requires immediate attention of the physician, it sends a SMS to the physician. So the physician, if he's not near the place, he can see, oh, my patient is having this particular critical parameter, he can go and attend.
I don't know how many hospitals will have such a facility.
So it's ultimately, as Ashwin was saying, one is to have the resource optimization. Second thing is how best patient care we can deliver in the amount of resources that we utilize. That is the intention. Ultimately, again, it comes to patient first.
Patient
is our guest. Patient is our relative. Patient is our family.
Patient is our king.
Yeah, he is the king.
So that was the first part of the panel discussion with alumni of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, now working in Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, Whitefield. We hope you liked it. In the next part of this discussion, you will hear Ashwin, Karthik, Satish Chandra and Neeraj. The panelists today talk about the transformation in the lives of patients at various levels that they have personally witnessed in this hospital, which extends even to suppliers, vendors and engineers, everyone connected with the hospital directly or remotely. And also, you will hear them talk about the challenges the hospital faces in the current times to what it means to work in the hospital, what it means to each one of them personally to serve in this institution. So that is coming up next Thursday for yet another episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside, where we will hear the second episode of this program, Baba's Super Speciality Hospital in Bangalore, moments of inspiration, introspection and hard work in the voices of Sai alumni. With this, dear listeners, it's time now to wind up this day-long live broadcast from Prashantinilayam. As always, you can write to us to tell what you feel about this program. Send in your emails to listener@radiosai.org, listener at radiosai.org. I am Team Radio Sai's Vishu, and now as I sign off, in a few moments you will listen to a conversation with Mr. I.S.N. Prasad, the Principal Secretary to the Government of Karnataka in charge of Information Technology and Biotechnology, who was in the hospital in Bangalore last November 2012. This is quite a revealing conversation. You will definitely want to listen to this. So happy listening, and finally from me and from all of us at Radio Sai, a sweet goodbye and loving Sairam from Prashantinilayam.